Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Mike Herhold, president of the First Friday Club of Greater Akron, and I would like to welcome you on behalf of myself and the board of the First Friday Club to our August 2017 program. Our distinguished speaker for today is Jeff Wilhite, Executive Director of Family Promise of Summit County and Summit County Council District 4 Representative, who will share his talk entitled Living the Red Words. Please silence your cell phones so that all can enjoy today's program. On your table, hopefully there are some cards for questions. If not, on the program insert, there should be room to write down questions because we will be doing questions after the talk. I'd now like to introduce First Friday Club board member Catherine Adamek, who will offer our opening prayer.
Oh yeah, where are they? Okay, I usually go back to the kitchen.
In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Lord, you are faithful indeed, and you shepherd us through challenge and joy, in times of pain and times of renewal. Knowing that we are yours, we invite you to be part of our conversations this day. Open our ears that we may hear what we need to hear from each other. Open our minds to new learning and our hearts to deeper compassion. We ask this through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. In the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen.
There she is. At this time, it's my pleasure to introduce Akron Canton Regional Food Bank President and CEO Dan Flowers, who will introduce our speaker.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. I always like to do my introductions over the sounds of smooth jazz, and so I regret that that was shut off right before the big moment. When I got the call and was asked to introduce Jeff Wilhite today, I jumped at the opportunity. And I don't have to prepare at all. I love Jeff. He's a great guy. I think it was 2003 when I got the job as CEO of the Akron Canton Regional Food Bank, and at that time, we still had an endowment board. We still have an endowment, but at that time, Jeff was a member of the endowment board. And it was very early into my tenure at the food bank that I met Jeff, and I was immediately impressed with Jeff's enthusiasm and his love for life and his love for great ideas and creativity and stunning good looks, Jeff. And since then, over the years, Jeff's been a faithful friend of mine. And friend of the food bank, you know, Jeff worked for the city of Akron, and I've always appreciated the way he's so squared away and represents every organization and every person that he's affiliated with the highest level of integrity and professionalism. And at the same time, I've come to see over the years that there's really two kinds of board members. Those who encourage and maybe sometimes those who don't, you know. And I found that that Jeff is just of the encouraging type. Sees the world with light in it and brings light to it. And I could go on and on. His qualifications are on the bio for today's speech. But Jeff is just a real admirer of yours. It's an honor to introduce you in any context, to be your friend in any context. Having had your kids into the food bank to volunteer, I know the family connections you have, and I guess the last thing I want to say is that if the tree is known by its fruit, over the course of a lifetime, we get to know a lot about the aspirations of someone's inner life, You know, running a charity like Family Promise, making the difference in the lives of people that are homeless in this community, serving as the chairman of the Food Bank Board, as a longtime endowment member, working to build a better community through affiliations with the City of Akron and now in the Senate County Council. Then you can see that the, what's that saying? The fish is healthy and the water's clean. You know, so much love to you, Jeff. How about a round of applause for Jeff Woolhite, everybody?
Well, good afternoon to all of you today, and I can't tell you what an honor it is to be introduced by Dan Flowers. I have absolute off-the-chart respect for this young man and what a great leader he is in this community, and I couldn't help but when he was saying the kind things he said about me, I was thinking about when we were together 2 weeks ago, and I've got to tell the story, Dan, because I'm repeating it again because it's a pretty thick head here, and I'm repeating it again and don't know how it's going to end up, but 2 weeks ago, Dan and Frank LaRose, who is, as you know, senator and in the state, but also works with Dan at the food bank, they've been having people come out, and they're big outdoor enthusiasts, and they certainly are big supporters of the outdoor community and all the great things that go on here in our community. And one of the things that they're looking to do is to create a water trail. You have hiking trails, biking trails, but a water trail on a part of the Cuyahoga River. And for those of you who have explored that, you know it's very beautiful throughout the whole area. So Dan had invited me to join several others on a kayaking trip down the Cuyahoga River. And we put in at an area that was already a rapid area. Now look, you guys, you've seen the Cuyahoga River. The rapids at the Cuyahoga River are not whitecap rushing rapids. Now, they're fast. They move pretty fast. But they're not, you know, I can't say that, you know, I was like, you know, some great whitewater rafting expedition. So they also had the kayaks, the newer style kayak, that is, it, you sit up higher on it, and it has like fins, you know, behind it and what have you. And when I got back and told the story, I said, you know, I just kept falling over because you sit higher and it's a high center of gravity. And Erica Cherry on my staff at the food bank said, oh yeah, Jeff, the center of gravity story, sure. Yeah, that's right. That's why you fell out of the boat. But I fell out of the boat 3 times in less than a mile and a half into the journey. And we're going down, and I'm slowing everybody up because I keep falling out of the boat. And I wasn't so much disappointed about that. The thing that disappointed me the most was my son was a pretty amazing baseball player, and he played for University of Pittsburgh at the Bradford campus. And why I wore it that day, I don't know, but I had the cap that I bought when he started playing ball at Pitt Bradford, and I just watched it go down the river past me, and my sunglasses went down into the bottom of the river, and one of my water socks came off. And so about the third time, Dan comes over to me. I'm clinging to a log. Water's rushing past my face, grass all over me. Dan says, he said, Jeff, I'm worried about you. He said, are you okay? Do you want to get in one of the canoes? I said, nah, I'm walking back to the car. I'm holding you guys up. I'm going to walk back to the car. He says, well, it's quite a ways back. And I knew enough about the Cuyahoga River. It wasn't that far. I didn't get that far down the river. So anyway, I'm thinking, well, how am I going to get up? The water's rushing past my head, you know, whatever. Then I look over, and it dawned on me, hey, idiot, stand up. You guys, it was barely at my knees. Water rushing past. I'm thinking, this is it. I'm done. Stood up, walked out, walked back to my car. Now, my presentation to you today is about the red words, and the red words in the Bible are those words that are spoken by God and gives you direction on how to live your life and be courteous to others and what have you. And the reason I'm telling you about the kayak trip is because when I got to land, genius that I am and outdoorsman that I am, One shoe's gone, one shoe's on. I get out where all the poison sumac and poison ivy and all that kind of stuff is at. I get over to the path, and I'm walking back to my car. Now picture this. I'm 6 foot three. I've got a life jacket on, soaking wet. I have grass all over me. I'm carrying a paddle. I'm carrying my key fob, which, by the way, if you have a newer car with a key fob, they're waterproof. I found that out. Carrying that, I have about one water sock on because I was trying to balance myself out. Walking down the path, not one of the six people I passed asked me if I was okay. Didn't ask me, do you need help or whatever. I can imagine what they saw when I was walking down the trail, but I'm thinking, you're not Redwooders. So I got back to the car and I got home. And then when I got home, I'm thinking, oh, I'll get all the attention in the world I need. I walked into the kitchen covered in grass and soaking wet, and my wife Cindy goes, get out in the garage and take that off. So no sympathy from the time I got it. Dan's the only one that gave me sympathy. He was worried that I wasn't going to make it back. So anyway, it is an honor for me to be here with all of you, to be here for First Friday, because as I look across the room, I'm just so grateful for all of you coming out today to hear a little bit about my life, but more importantly about Redwoods and what they mean to me and what I've done in my life and continue to do in my life. And hopefully, at the end of the presentation today, you'll have a takeaway of just how they can be helpful to you in your life. But I do want to introduce a couple people before I get started, because my journey with the Redwoods began with this Bible. It was the first one that was ever given to me, and it was given to me by my mother on my graduation back in 1979. There you go. You can do the math. You can start figuring out how old I am. But It was something that meant a great deal to me because of some things that we had going on in our family at the time, and she wanted to make sure that I got off to a good start and had a starting point. So I want to introduce to you, ladies and gentlemen, my mother, Alice Lehmesser, over here at the table. So. And as I mentioned in my presentation, the other greatest thing that ever happened to me in my life is my wife, Cindy. So let me begin down through the living the Redwoods journey as what it means to me, and presentation announcement. This is what works for me. I don't ever want to purport myself as someone who can give advice or direction in anything that would be in someone's personal life. I just don't see myself as qualified to do that. But it means a lot to me because having just taken on another part of my life, joining Summit County Council and being a part of local government, that means a lot to me. I have a responsibility to do the best I can every day in that role. And I had an individual that I had to follow to meet up with that, and he's here today, Frank Communel, over here at this table. Frank, thank you for your service to this community. And John Schmidt, my partner on County Council and also County Council President, is here today, and I really appreciate you being here, John. Thank you. I want to begin by being completely transparent with all of you. I do not profess to be an expert in anything. I am not a learned theologian. I'm not a church expert. I'm not a perfect father. I'm not a world-renowned business leader, and not a leading authority on community life, certainly. I am a participant in that, however, and proud of that. I am a very deep believer in the Trinity and the utter amazement of it and this journey we call life. I'm telling you this because several months ago when I received the call from Mike to invite me to share with you today for First Friday, I was deeply honored. I went to the website and learned of those who have spoken here at First Friday and those ahead of me yet to speak. Secondly, I thought to myself, did someone cancel? Now, mind you, I accepted right away because at the time, before she retired, my wife Cindy was principal at Our Lady of the Elms High School, and she was their representative to First Friday. So naturally, I had a working knowledge of First Friday, but it was just enough to be dangerous. So lastly, I thought, if I'm going to speak here today, let me further explore their website and make sure I clearly understand what is expected of the speaker. So I began my navigation through the website. I clicked on the About button and began to read what it states under the Who We Are lead paragraph. Let me share with you what I read. It began, the First Friday Club of Akron. And then in parentheses, it has FFCGA. I started to get a little nervous right away because any organization that can capitalize who they are in a paragraph, it makes you a little nervous. They're pretty big. For example, FSCGA, GAR, ACF, Akron Community Foundation, who we all know is an extraordinary asset to this community, University of Akron. For you sports fans here today, the NFL, the MLB, the NBA, the PGA, and for all of us in this room, IRS. Those are parentheses words that make you nervous. But anyway, it continues in there that the FSCGA was founded in Akron, Ohio in August of 1999. So let me stop here to say happy anniversary to First Friday. Great resource for the community. Its purpose, as it stated, is to bring the best Catholic thinkers, teachers, and leaders to Akron on a monthly basis to promote a better understanding of the significant issues impacting church, family, work, and community life. That's as far as I got, because two thoughts came to mind very quickly. First thing was, oh crap. The second one was, borrowing the expression used by Sister Maura Bartell at the Elms whenever she gets excited about something, but she understands that words matter when you're around young people's ears, shut the front door. What an epic failure on the part of Mike inviting me to speak with you today. Hopefully you'll give me a little bit of leeway by the end of the presentation. But ladies and gentlemen, as I said, I do not profess to be an expert in anything. I am, however, a disciple of the red words in the Bible. At least I try to be for my church, for my family, for my work, and for my community. So let me explain. For my family and church, the first Bible, as I mentioned, that I was ever given was, as my very own, was the Bible that my mother gave me back in 1979 as a graduation gift. I cherish the Bible for two reasons. Number one, it's the Bible, greatest story ever told. And two, because my mother gave it to me. It's a life treasure that I'll never get rid of. This past December 28th, it was used to swear me in to the office of Summit County Councilman with my family present. And as you can see, it's a little worn, but it's not worn out. There's a deep reverence to this book in my life. There's also a deep appreciation for it as well, because there are these red words throughout the book. In my life, they're invaluable. The word red, R-E-D, again, specifically in my life, stands for R, rapidly, E, educate, D, the dummy. R-E-D, red words, rapidly educate the dummy. And I refer to them on a regular basis, believe me. But in all seriousness, most of the words in my Bible are printed in black, but some of them are in red, as I said, and I quickly came to realize the red words are the words spoken by Christ. I think to myself today, wow, the original tweet, because many of them are less than 140 characters. These are the words Jesus spoke to us directly, guiding us towards a better life, a better community of mankind. Being a lover of history that I am, I wondered where and when did the red words in the Bible appear. I learned that more than 100 years ago, a man named Louis Klopsch published the first red letter Bible. The story goes that as he thought about Jesus' words in Luke chapter 22, verse 20, which reads, "This is the new covenant in my blood, which is shed for you." So Lewis purposely used blood red ink to call specific attention to his words. I thought that was amazing. Now the red words began to mean a lot to me in my life and guide me. In all transparency, I was not born into a Catholic family. I attended the Methodist Church. In 1982, while in college at the University of Akron, my life changed in the most magnificent way I could ever imagine. I met Cindy. I was enrolled in my Western Civilization class. It was the first day of classes, and we in walked the most beautiful girl ever on this planet. And this October, we will celebrate 33 years together. I did not learn, nor do I remember one thing about Western civilization, but I recommend it to anybody. We had great professors, though. Over those 33 years, Cindy and I were blessed with our son, Jordan, and now our daughter-in-law, Laura, and our daughter, Katie. And September 3rd, or thereabouts, we'll welcome Olivia Grace into our lives, as our first grandchild will be born around that time. Besides the absolute amazement of this new life, I have three words for you to describe our feelings: over the moon. There are three other words as well: Toys R Us. Have you been to Toys R Us? How many grandparents in the room? How many parents? I've already been there three times. It has changed so much in 25 years. It is awesome. So anyway, at the time I began dating Cindy, her family were members of Our Lady of Victory in Talmadge, and I started to attend Our Lady of Victory with Cindy and her family, and I was absorbing the Catholic faith. In late 1983, I proposed to Cindy, and we were married in October of 1984. The priest at that time at Our Lady of Victory was Father Ray Finnerty, an absolutely beautiful human being. Back then, we had to attend pre-Cana classes. I don't know if that's still the practice, because it's been 33 years since I've had to do it, so I don't know if they still do that or not, but it was a wonderful experience. Father was our instructor. The class covered life issues, the church, and family responsibilities. I began to think that someday I'd be a father, and I realized I was conflicted. How do we explain to our children that Daddy goes to one church and Mommy goes to a different church? For Cindy and me, we wanted God in our lives, and we wanted to show that and live that as examples to our children. It was important to me that Cindy was born into the Catholic Church. I was not. I did not feel it was right to force a change in her life for something so important in her life. Father was great. Naive me, I was nervous to share with this man about my religious background. After all, what would he think? Father put me at ease immediately after I said to him, "Father, you know I'm Methodist, don't you?" Father leaned forward in his chair and looked me right in the eyes, and he said, "Does it hurt?" I froze. Do I laugh? Do I get angry? Then, true to form, Father began to laugh and immediately put me at ease when he gently said, "God does not care what house you sit in, Jeff, as long as you sit with Him." So, to me, that was a wow moment. Everything was starting to come into focus. The red words are as important to me as they were to Father Ray. And he was a Catholic. He believed in the Bible on what God wants us to be: tolerant, non-judgmental, full of grace, and family-focused. What Father Ray was saying was to follow the red words, and you'll figure it out. I was able to make the decision to join the Catholic Church, and it didn't hurt. I began to understand the responsibilities that laid ahead for Cindy and I, and the family we someday would have. I realized that the foundation I gained from reading and trying to understand the red words, trying to live by them, would not change because of the house I was sitting in, but that as long as I was sitting with God, it would all work out. I converted to the Catholic faith, and through my life's work, try to do right by my faith, my family, and my church. Now for my community work, for my community and my work. I've been involved in my community since I was 17 years old. It's hard to believe it's been 39 years. But back then, I began serving on the student government at Kenmore High School, where I led the Kenmore community effort to create Akron's first senior center, which is still open on Kenmore Boulevard. I was the founding director of the Summit Akron Solid Waste Management Authority, served as the chief operating officer of Inventor Place, the National Inventors Hall of Fame. I was deputy mayor for administration for the city of Akron. Excuse me, I'm an inventor. Currently, I serve as Director of Family Promise of Summit County, which I'm going to share with you here in a little bit, and I'm serving as Summit County Councilman for District 4. There's considerably more I could discuss, but I just wanted to share those activities with you to give you an understanding of my involvement in the community. Environmental stewardship has been something I've engaged in all my adult life. Now, I don't really know anyone that gets up in the morning and says, "Hey, you know what? It's a beautiful day. Clouds are out. sky is blue, I'm going to screw up the environment today. I don't know a whole lot of people that do that, but there are some knuckleheads out there that do that. But the Bible tells us stewardship is a paramount responsibility of us as members of this planet, and it's something that I've taken to heart my adult life. My experience does tell me there are three categories of people and how they handle the environment. There are those knuckleheads that do harm to the environment due to ignorance and laziness, especially those who litter. You guys have seen them. You're going down the road, out goes the coffee cup, out goes a piece of paper, they pull up to a red light, out goes the cigarette butt. Those things last 1,000 years. So I don't know where they think that stuff's going to go, but that's certainly not being a good steward of the environment. But the good news is that is a small percentage of the population. Then there are those who want to do right by the environment but passively wait for someone to come up with ways to protect and improve it. Thank goodness they're a shrinking percentage. Then my favorite people, those who do something about it. I'm happy to say that it's a growing percentage. They recycle, they buy recycled products, they use energy-efficient lighting, they repurpose old stuff versus sending it to the landfill, seek alternative fuels, and more. Ladies and gentlemen, the red words have been speaking to me the last 35 years of my life. They speak to my passion for a strong and healthy environment. I want you to think about something. The very first words in the Bible, the very first words, Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. There you go. It's a gift. It's a gift to all of us, and it's our responsibility to keep her healthy and strong. Now, these red words, these are not red words, obviously, in Genesis, because it's a narrative. It's not God speaking. But when we see the world as a gift from God, we're called to be good stewards in the care of it and use it wisely instead of poisoning it and destroying it. The Bible addresses environmental conservation in some 2,567 verses in the Bible address the importance of environmental stewardship. Of those verses, 1,929 are from the Old Testament and 638 are from the New Testament. Now, I know what you're thinking. I said I wasn't a biblical scholar. I didn't sit there counting the verses from the time Mike called me to this point in time. But it was excellent data from an article written by William T. Johnson in the fall of 2000. That article appeared in the Quadlibet Journal and was entitled "The Bible on Environmental Conservation: A 21st Century Prescription." So, as the new millennium was starting, everybody was looking at what the next 100 years would be all about, and obviously, environmental stewardship was, thank goodness, at the top of the list. So, okay. I can read and I can quote stuff, but what have I actually done to be an example of these words? In 1988, Ohio House Bill 592 was passed into law. 592 was the new state Ohio recycling law. In it, counties were directed to create a plan for solid waste collection, scrap tire, household hazardous waste, recycling collection, and landfill management. At the time, solid waste management became a national problem. If you'll remember, it came to a head in 1987 when the now infamous garbage barge, known as the Mobro 4000, began its 6,000-mile journey along the East Coast, the Gulf of Mexico, and through the Bahamas, looking to find a port that would accept 3,000 tons of Islip, New York's garbage. The Mobro brought focus on the issue of landfill capacity, interstate commerce, and management of what is now called infectious waste. How do we manage soil and water issues surrounding landfills, and what we put in them and what we keep out of them was the top of mind question at the time. In 1980, I was charged with getting the new solid waste plan for Summit County approved and the fee structure to fund it approved countywide. In addition, explain to the public what we would do to protect soil, water, and air as it relates to solid waste disposal and landfills. Excuse me, I'm pleased to report we were pretty highly successful in that effort on many fronts. We created Ohio's first household hazardous waste recycling center, which was nationally recognized in Washington, D.C. by the National League of Cities. But I will tell you, it started off a little rough. We were criticized heavily when we planned a household hazardous waste collection day. Maybe some of you in this room participated in that. And if you are, it's been a 25-year apology, but it worked. We knew people wanted to do the right thing with these materials, and they knew they were not good for the environment by pouring them down the drain or on the ground. Critics, including members of my board, said things like, who's going to load old paint, old oil, old batteries, chemicals, put it in their car, and drive to a recycling day to get rid of it? We were told no one will show up. Well, they did. We proved them wrong. We had 4,000 cars in 4 hours come to two locations in the county, and both sites had several hundred cars waiting in line before we opened the event. After it was over, I was heavily criticized that it was a failure, and as some people waited hours in line. Well, my response was, no way was it a failure. We proved people not only want to do the right thing, but they did the right thing. Today, after 25 plus years, the center is still serving the county off of Graham Road and collects millions of pounds of materials that we don't want to go down that Cuyahoga River that Dan and I partly explored. Dan explored the whole thing, but it is just too important that we don't do those things. Why did we do it? By not pouring these chemicals down the drain or on the ground. In lakes and streams means cleaner water. Cleaner water means a healthier environment. That is living the red words. Sonoma County was the first to access the state's new scrap tire remediation dollars as we petitioned and were awarded a $1 million remediation grant to remediate the Regenesis tire pile on Clark Mill Road in Norton. Maybe some of you remember it was one of the largest in the state. It caught fire several times. Ash showed up as far south as the city of Columbus. It was also a major breeding ground for mosquitoes. So why not address that? It was important because it had to do with what we were charged with in the plan. We did it so that the tires would not catch fire and pollute the air again or be a ongoing breeding ground for mosquitoes and the diseases that they carried. That's living the red words. I've spent nearly 10 years developing alternative energy technology allowing small internal combustion engines, which are the worst polluters today in things like lawnmowers and four-wheelers. The technology allows the small engine to run on hydrogen, which is the cleanest fuel on Earth, natural gas, and methane. The technology is a fuel mixing block that does not require a computer, does not require fuel injection to successfully run the engine with dramatically reduced emissions. We have received 2 United States and Mexican patents for the technology. We have patents pending in Canada and Brazil for that technology. Why did we do it? Cleaner fuel means cleaner air, and that's living the red words. Today, I'm the executive director of Family Promise of Summit County. Family Promise is a homeless shelter for homeless families with children. We don't define family. We keep them together to heal and get into a home. Homelessness is something I'm deeply compassionate about, and because the average age of a homeless person in our nation, the average age of a homeless person in this country is 9 years old. That's not right. It hurts my soul that a child has no roof over their head when they go to sleep at night, every night. I want you to think about that for a moment. These are not the stereotypical rhino or lazy person living under the bridge. We're standing next to them in the grocery line, pumping gas into our car. If they're fortunate enough to still have their car, we're right in among them. It's truly, that car truly becomes a mobile home for that family. And I want you to think about every single night, we're going to leave here, we're going to go home, and we're going to have a roof over our head, we're going to lay our head on a pillow, we're going to have a safe place to be every night. Not so much these families that are in the cars. They begin their nightly ritual with one family member being the lookout while the others get a chance to sleep because they're constantly looking out to make sure that the family is safe from people who prey on them, from having to move the car so they don't get a ticket for loitering. For that child to do that every night and still be in school and still try to build their lives is a tragedy that shouldn't happen. And that's where Family Promise steps in, and we try to mediate that every day. Dan and his team at the food bank are there every day to provide food for these families because they are hungry. Nobody, ladies and gentlemen, nobody can focus on improving their life when their stomach is empty and the stars or the headliner of their old car is the roof that they look at night. Family Promise, as I mentioned, is an organization that works daily to help these families that are in a negative situation. And I'm very proud today that our board president, Jim Strang, over here is with us, and our board vice president, Dan Apitz, is here with one of his colleagues from Dominion East, Ohio. These two gentlemen are very devoted to the mission of Family Promise. I'm proud and honored to have them on our board, as I am the other board members for Family Promise. Family Promise, I tell people, and there's a whole lot of truth to this, ladies and gentlemen. I might be the director, but we have two of the. We're not a big staff. There's only three of us and one part-time person, but we have two of the most phenomenal young women working in our organization. They are leaders in what they do, and they make Family Promise work for all of the families that come into Family Promise, and I'm just thrilled that they're here today. Erica Cherry is our social worker. Erica, wave your hand. And Pauline Egan is our operations manager. Absolutely. But the most important red words apply to what I'm doing now, and I'm going to share those with you because I try to adhere to these every day. And it comes from, and you probably are all familiar with this, from Matthew 20, chapter 25, verses 35 through 40. For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Then the righteous asked, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? Lord, when did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Lord, when did we see you sick or in prison and come unto you? And the Lord said to them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto the least of my brethren, you have done it unto me. Living the red words, you serve Christ. You serve the mission of the greatest story ever told in humanity in this universe. And it is very important that we continue to do that. And that's what Family Promise does. We are a network of host congregations throughout the county that act as the evening's host for the families. We have a rotational model where each week one of those hosts will take a family from Sunday to Sunday. They provide a place for them to sleep at night. They provide them a warm meal at the end of the day when we transport them to the site. There's a whole host of support congregations that help in the effort that takes to make these their lives better. They cook the meals, they drive the van, they do laundry of the bedding, they move the beds from one congregation to the next for the next week's rotation. It is a beautiful example of the faith community that we are so blessed with in this county, what they do on a weekly basis, week in, week out, year in and year out. The day center that we operate over on Voris Avenue, and I invite all of you to come anytime you have some time to come and see it. It is an extraordinary place. It is a place that we pride ourselves on allowing it to be a place for the families to come to catch their breath, to refocus their lives. Erica and Pauline work on a case management program with them, help fill in the voids that are in their lives. And I'm telling every one of you in this room, these are not lazy people. These are not people who are a wino or don't have any effort to do anything in their lives. These, ladies and gentlemen, are no different than you and I. They want the same thing that you and I have for their families. They want their families warm. They want them safe. They want them educated. They want them fed. They want them clothed. And that's what Family Promise does. We don't do it alone because there are so many organizations that help us meet that challenge. Whether it's from the amazing funding network that we have become a part of, the Akron Community Foundation, GAR, several of the family foundations. The Maynard Family Foundation is one of them. The Reeds, Roger, and bless her soul before she passed, Judy, just are amazing people, and there's so many more. But they help us with the funding structure that makes that happen. Then there's another amazing layer. That's the volunteers that give of their time, give of their talent, and they're there so that these families can have the respect and the dignity that each and every one of us wants in our lives. I'm going to share a quick story with you, and I share this every chance I get. When I first started as director at Family Promise, we were in the, for some of you who know our old location, it was an old parsonage. It was the Miller Avenue Parsonage over on Miller Avenue. I started in February. It was a cold, blustery, snowy day. The window in the attic had blown out, which Pauline told me was a weekly occurrence. So we had to get that fixed. There was a young man with his two children. And one thing I failed to mention to you is Family Promise does not define family. It is not our place to define who you say is your family. It is our place to give you a respite and an opportunity to get your life back together. This gentleman was introduced to me by Pauline, and I just, like you all do, I did the same thing. I shook his hand and said, "I'm pleased to meet you, sir. If there's anything that we can do for you today, let me know." And we went on about our day. The van shows up at the end of the day. This gentleman stops me in the kitchen and he said, "Jeff, can I talk to you for a second?" I said, "Sure." So he pulls me off to the side, tears welling up in this man's eyes. He looked at me and he said, "Jeff, I just want to thank you. It's been a very, very long time since anybody addressed me as sir." That said it all for me, because it's just something we do. We just, it's a common courtesy that everybody does. But given the situation that he was in, that wasn't part of his life. That's what the red words are all about, ladies and gentlemen. It is understanding that tolerance has got to be the mantra of the day. Respect for other people. And understanding that just because they don't live on the same street, in the same neighborhood that we live in, and have the things that we might have, doesn't make them any less of a human being, and doesn't mean they want anything less for their families in their lives. They love their families as much as we love ours. As I mentioned earlier, the red words provide me with a guide to think through what life challenges me with, whether it be my family, my church, my community, or my environment. It allows for thought and reason to hopefully make sound decisions. The individual human mind and the ability to think through and act on the red words is an extraordinary thing that puts us all in a position of responsibility, but arms us with the tools to make a difference, an effective, real, and positive change. I think of these often, and in the most poignant way that I can describe it comes from the dialogue in the final court scene in the 1960 movie Inherit the Wind. In my opinion, one of the greatest movies of all time, along with To Kill a Mockingbird. It stars Spencer Tracy as the defense attorney, Henry Drummond, and Frederick March as the prosecuting attorney, Matthew Harrison Brady. The movie was about the 1920s Scopes trial, and I'm not here to talk about creationism versus evolution. There was another message in there. But it was to share the thought and guidance that when and how thought and good guidance converge to resolve challenges. It's a very important thing. In the movie, Tracy's character challenges March's character with the concept of the individual human mind and the power to reason and to think. Tracy's character says, "An idea is a greater monument than a cathedral." Ladies and gentlemen, the red words, like an idea, are the greatest monument to God, as it is His Word, and it's a living monument, a guide or idea starter for us to address life challenges and to make life better every single day. When we're not selfish about it, it makes the lives of others better as well. It allows progress, not regression, to take place. Progress that leads to solutions. Sometimes it's direct progress. Sometimes it's negotiated progress. Sometimes it's compromised progress, but progress none the same. In the movie, Tracy's character goes on about progress when he says, "Gentlemen," he's talking to the jury, Gentlemen, progress has never been a bargain. You have to pay for it. Sometimes I think there's a man who sits behind a desk and says, okay, you can have a telephone, but you give up privacy and the charm of distance. Madam, you have the right to vote, but you give up the right to hide behind the powder puff or the petticoat. Now remember, it was 1920s. Mister, you may conquer the air, but the birds will lose their wonder, and the clouds will forever smell of gasoline. The red words, like progress, often come at a cost that we may not think we're ready to pay. Finally, in the movie, Tracy's character addresses the importance of man's ability to think when he says, gentlemen, then why did God plague us with the power to think? It is the one faculty that allows man to rise above all the creatures of the earth. It is the power of his brain to reason and to think. What other merit do we have? The elephant is larger, the horse is swifter and stronger, the butterfly is far more beautiful, the mosquito is more prolific, even the sponge is more durable. To me, God brings us clarity in the red words, especially in those of Matthew 25, 35 to 40, on the relationship between treating others with respect, compassion, tolerance, grace, what a great word, grace, and kindness, and how we are doing so in his image in our treatment of others through our actions. I would say that I'm not the only one who tries to live the red words. I would say that all of you in this room are red worders. Given the work that you do, whether it be for an organization like Family Promise, whether it be for the county, whether it be for private business, for your families, for your church, the volunteerism you do, it's all red words, you guys, because you're not selfish. You're not doing it for anybody else. You're doing it for the betterment of your family, of your community, of your work, and for your church. One of the things that I want to close with is I want you to walk away, if you take nothing else away from what I said today, I want you to understand, as somebody who has observed this community for 35 years, who's been involved in every way that I possibly can, that you matter in this community. There is a, and I'm not going to get political here, but there is a sense sweeping across the country that is very selfish. Grace has nothing to do with the message that we're hearing on a daily basis. It matters what you say to somebody. It matters that you treat them with respect. It matters that you treat them with tolerance. It matters that you show grace to everyone you come in contact with in your life. Because I will tell you, from experience, it has a payback beyond anything I could ever imagine. It means that we have a community we can be proud of. It's a community that others will want to be a part of. And most importantly, my opinion, is that it gives our families a place that they can have peace, they can have a neighborhood, they can have a community where they belong. And then they become ambassadors to the world on who we are in Akron, Ohio, and in Summit County. And I'm going to tell you, as one who's been an observer, as I said, we are the best people anywhere. We challenge, we debate, we push, we create, and that's what you want a community to be all about. So, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to hear some comments about myself and the red words and what they mean to me. I hope they mean something to you going forward, and I wish you all great health and peace. Thank you. I understand it's question time, so this is where I get really nervous.
You can take a rest for a few minutes. I've got announcements here. I just want to thank Jeff again for that inspiration, motivation. I think pointing out the fact that those red words are really words to live by. And I think it kind of made a lot of us feel good, but it also made us further challenged into what we need to continue to do. Please take a moment to write down any questions you might have, and we have some board members who will stand up and pick those up from you. A few announcements. Our next luncheon will be here at Tangier on Friday, September 1st. Our speaker will be Father Michael Stala, pastor of St. Cosmas and Damien in Twinsburg, who will speak to us on the mission in El Salvador. If you are someone listening to our podcast right now on our website, we invite you to join us in person, and you can send a check for $20 to First Friday Club, 795 Russell Avenue, Akron, 44307. You can call our phone number, 330-535-7668 each month, or online, our website using Eventbrite. If you sign up on a monthly basis, please let us know by Tuesday before the Friday talk. You can hear a podcast of this presentation by logging in to the website. And I'm asking those of you here to recommend this to your friends, that they do listen to this podcast. And since you've been here and heard it, I think you'd be happy to recommend that to others. If you're not on our mailing list, take time to fill out one of the orange cards, which I hope are on the table, but we may have run out of them. I'd like to recognize first-time attendees, so if you are here for the first time, please wave or stand. I'd also like to recognize the members of the First Friday Club board, so if you could either wave or stand. Now I'd like to introduce our Vice President, Bernie Rochford, who will share with us some questions.
Before I read a question, I would like to just comment. I did have the opportunity to tour the Family Promise Center a year or two ago. And fascinating program, and one of the things Jeff didn't mention, I hope you're still doing it with pets.
Yes.
Maybe
yes.
You could talk about that if you get a chance. How does your mission differ from the Salvation Army or Haven of Rest?
The only difference between Salvation Army and Haven of Rest and some of the other programs is we take the whole family. That's how we're structured. We take families with children. The whole premise there being that keeping the whole family together, they can heal quicker, they can get on track quicker. I'm very proud to say that we have a 92% success rate of the families coming into the program, going into sustainable housing when they leave. We follow them for a year afterwards just to make sure that nothing happens. They know they've still got friends at Family Promise, that kind of a thing. And they're with us about 30 to 40 days, so that's a pretty quick turnaround to go from the situation they're in when they arrive to a sustainable future going forward. That's on average. Now, if a family is with us, we know they've got a positive outcome, but it's going to be 60 or 90 days down the road. We don't say to them, okay, you got to get out. We get them to a sustainable future going forward. And as Bernie mentioned, we are able to keep the whole family, including the four-legged furry friends. If they have a longtime family pet, instead of having to get rid of the pet, or put the pet down, they can bring the pet to us. We have four dog kennels and four cat condos. The cat folks told me I'm not allowed to say cat kennel. They're condos.
How would a family in need connect with Family Promise?
That's a great question. Thank you for that. There in the county is a program called the Continuum of Care that comes through HUD. And it's been something that we've all been working on to centralize the efforts, because we do a lot of collaboration in this arena. And we have a homeless hotline now that comes through InfoLine. They collect data so that we can track folks, we can make sure they're getting the right resource. As an example, if somebody has a mental health issue or an addiction issue, we're not able to help them at all at Family Promise because we don't have the professional staff to do that. So through this collective and this collaboration, we can get them to the proper resource that can help them much, much better than if they just languished with us because we didn't have that that resource. But the continuum of care is very, very important because we've all come together, all the different agencies that help in some aspect of the social services, so that we can better track, have a better understanding of what's going on in the community, and then that helps us marshal the proper resources to continue the work.
I'll ad lib a few questions then. How can a church or community get involved if they, the difference, I guess, between a host church and a contributing church, and I'd ask you if any of the Catholic churches were active in that. Maybe you could share that.
Sure.
Challenge to the Catholic
Church. Yeah, I would love to put a challenge out. We have had some support from St. Augustine's in Barberton over the years. They do some things for us at the holiday time. But homelessness isn't just holidays, folks. It's 24/7, 365. And the way that a host comes on board is that they offer their building for a week at a time. We have 14 throughout the county. So this week, Church Congregation A takes the responsibility of the families coming to them about 5:30 in the evening. They provide them a warm meal in whatever rooms they have available, whether it's a Bible study class or other rooms. We give the family a room so they have privacy to be a family. We provide beds, mobile beds for them. They transfer from church to church throughout the week, the 14-week rotation. So a host provides that with volunteers, and then we try to match a support to that host so they can fill in the volunteer needs, making the meals, driving the van in the morning, or at the end of the day back to the host congregation. It's very important to us that we keep the school-age children that are in the program in their school of origin, because they've already got enough going on in their lives. We try very, very hard to keep the students in school. So we'll make sure that when they leave the congregation in the morning, that the students get dropped off at school first. And then the parents come to the center after that. And a real quick side story with that. The original van that we had, it was time to replace it. It was coming up on sort of its last legs. And it had, our former name was Interfaith Hospitality Network. It changed to Family Promise back in 2006. Well, it was emblazoned on the side of the van. Well, we had some of the school-age children say to our volunteer drivers, could you drop me a couple blocks from the building, because they were embarrassed and they got picked on because, oh, you're in the homeless shelter, you know, kind of thing. And they would do that. So when we were blessed to get a new van through the Gulf Charities, the business person in me sees 12 feet on both sides of that van that can advertise our program, but it's not about me. It's about the young people that were and the families that were transporting. There's no marking on the van. It looks like a school transportation bus, and that's so that the kids can be dropped off to school without the embarrassment. So those kinds of things happen on a regular basis. A host congregation, maybe Pauline, four times a year in the rotation. They'll take a week, so 4 weeks out of a year, they're acting as host. And then the supports that are assigned to them. But another thing that will be a big help for us is just allowing us to circulate our program at your congregation and see if we can get volunteers. Volunteers are just as valuable, whether they're an individual or if they're representing a congregation. They are the lifeblood of what we do, and if we could put that message out, that would be great.
How many families and or individuals can you handle at any one time, and are you meeting the needs that you're currently seeing?
Answer to the last part of the question, no, we're not meeting the need. What's our number on the waiting list right now? In the county, hundreds of families go without a place to be at night. We're able to serve four families at a time. Over the course of a year, we're between 35 and 40 families that we get through the program, the way that we're structured. We are, as I mentioned, collaboration is a big thing for us. We're working with Terry Heckman, who, if you don't know Terry Heckman, she is a dynamo, has done great things with Battered Women's Shelter. Their former facility is an apartment building that has three levels to it, and there's three apartments on each level. we're doing the research now and have some requests out for funding that instead of that building closing up, and that's 9 units that take away from homeless families in the community, we're trying to do a collaboration with Battered Women's Shelter and Access and Family Promise, where we'll have 3 of the apartments and we can put families there. So instead of serving 4 at a time, we'll serve 7. That'll start eating away at that number of homeless folks that are in the community. But we're meeting the needs of the families that come to us. But the need is pretty great out there, folks. I mean, you all understand what's happening in the community. Affordable housing is the big issue, and living wage jobs. Those two pieces are the real issue to homelessness.
The last question in you know the tweet whatever the caricatures 140. Uh-huh. What would a volunteer do to be helpful?
There's several things. Help with securing donations for the infants in the program, diapers, formula, that kind of a thing. Although I will tell you that we have a really strong network of well baby initiatives throughout the county. The hospitals, certainly Children's, Cleveland Clinic, Akron General, there's a program through SUMA where they try to make those kind of items available as often and as much as they can. Helping a host congregation with a meal during an evening. If you have the kind of time, a volunteer could drive the van. That's always helpful. We have needs at the center. We get donations dropped off directly. Being able to sort through clothing and keep our clothing program running for the families. It's a really neat program because the donations come to us, gently used clothing, and then we make that available to the families as well. When the families leave us, as you can imagine, they come to us with nothing. When they leave us, we try to provide them with what they need to get their home started and back up and running. So kitchen items, we provide pots and pans, dishes, flatware, cleaning supplies. We make sure that the families at the very least, have an air mattress so they're not sleeping on the floor. When they come to us, we give them brand new pillows, sheets, and a blanket. That's theirs to keep going forward. But for hygiene purposes and insect control, bed bugs, and those kinds of things, that's a great way to address that issue. So just if you just think about what you do in your daily life in your home to live in your home, it's those kinds of things that we could use help with. If you love to read to children, we've got some young folks, they love it when you sit down with them with a book. Books are still, regardless of the electronic age we're in, are still enchanting to young people, which is great. So if you're interested and so inclined to be a volunteer, let me give you our phone number. There's a brochure that we pass out on the table. It's for an event that's coming up October the 7th. It's called Box City. It is a signature fundraising event for us. We hope you'll look at that and consider a gift, but more importantly, come out and learn more about the program. It's an effort to increase awareness of the issue of homelessness. We have struggled for many, many years to figure out a signature event for ourselves and do so in a way that we're not competing with other nonprofits and their efforts in trying to raise money for their program. So this is what we'll be doing on October the 7th. I believe the phone number is on there. If anybody would like to leave your name, I'll be here a little bit after the event. Pauline is here. We'd be happy to take that contact information. So.
Thank you again, Jeff. It's my pleasure now to introduce First Friday Club board member Steve Brownfield, who will lead us in our closing prayer.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Dear Lord, having heard how to live the words in red, we pray that you help us live them as St. Francis said, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, joy. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love, for it is in